This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
Welcome to the English Football Show right here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and around the world. It's a two-man show this week with myself, Christopher Chrysostomou, and Mitch Keating joining me today. Mitch, how are you?
Good, very good. Lot to get through on today's episode, just the two of us, but I'm sure we'll pull through the whole hour.
Now, you're a big Game of Thrones fan. What did you make of the ending, the season finale or the finale of the entire series yesterday?
Yeah, like the football season itself, all good things must come to an end. This one, we'll talk about quick Game of Thrones. I won't give anything away for those that haven't heard it. But, yeah, an interesting episode to finish off what's been, 10 years worth and a great effort from them. But, yeah, for football this week, I guess, is our main talking point. And coming up, with our EPL, we'll be in the second half this week. We'll have our 20-minute, 20-team review. So we'll go through every side and look back. And Chris has got a few ratings for each side. I know he's got a few teams he wants to grill as well, I'm sure of it. And also, obviously, we have our playoffs. All finals are now, well, we know who's in them and who will... And obviously going off last week's results as well, so some fantastic games. And our roving reporter for this weekend?
Jaden Bevel, Sunderland fan, and that will be at 11:15 today. So make sure you join in at 11:15 to hear that. I am disappointed that Tim isn't here today because I do have some news that he might be interested in. We know Tim is a massive music fan, and Premier League referee John Moss apparently is opening up his own vinyl store in England.
In England, there you go.
And it's called the Vinyl Whistle.
Is that where Tim is now? Why he's not here with us?
I think he's in Sydney, but
I'm still celebrating the win.
There's reports now that he's going to the Sydney airport to fly over to England to have a look at that store, the Vinyl Whistle. But let's begin with the EFL playoff finals. And I think we'll start off with the first final, which will take place Sunday, 12 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, and that game will be League Two's Tranmere versus Newport. The two teams that finished 6th and 7th in League Two qualify for that final. We didn't expect it at the start. We did have an opinion they might be able to do it because the teams were so even, but to not see Mansfield in this final is a shock to us all.
Yeah, exactly. I know we touched on this last week because we did have the results as of last Tuesday morning. But, touching on these two getting through again, I think it was a unanimous decision that Mansfield were set to play in the final. And we didn't know who was against, whether it was Forest Green or Tranmere. But, credit to Newport, an upset. And both sides through now in an underdog story. And, it's just been fantastic. And you look across all three all three sets of finals, and I guess there's so many sides that were lower ranked and had to play away in those second legs, and we had a lot of fantastic fixtures, and the Tranmere Forest Green one being one of them, but both sides in the League Two deservedly so after their output to finish off that season. It was fantastic going off from last week's results. Look, James Norwood scoring. He said he owed one to the lads, and because he hadn't found his shooting boots. And I guess for Newport defenders, it's going to be a dangerous time of the season if he has found them and if he does find them in the final once again.
They were fortunate, Tranmere, because Forest Green had two red cards over the two legs, but they did dominate those matches, even though they did play for the extra man. In the first leg, they probably should have won by more at home. They only won 1-0, but that was because of the superb defending by Forest Green. But they really could have won that 3-0. I'm going to expect a close game between these two teams because in their last four games, they've had under 3 goals scored all up in their last four games between these two sides. The key players for both teams, for Tranmere Rovers, of course, it is James Norwood with 32 goals in the season. But on the other side, Newport County, they've got Padraig Armand on 23 goals and Janiel Matt on 20 goals for the season.
We know both Armand and Norwood were both massive in those finals playoffs in the first round, and I'm expecting I'm expecting Tranmere to go through. It'll be a fantastic season for them, having just returned to the Football League. And obviously something we saw with Luton, but their own little story. Now doing it through the playoffs, that's been absolutely fantastic for them this season. Yeah, I'm backing Tranmere Rovers to get through. Probably James Norwood finding the net. Who else, I guess, for this season for them? But no, it's going to take a team effort. And like you said, these are two very strong defensive units. And I wouldn't be surprised if this is taken into 120 minutes and potentially even penalties.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it goes to penalties. A player that I think will have a massive role in this game is the right back from Tranmere Rovers, and that is Jake Caprice. He's I've been really impressed by him. He's 26 years of age, and the way he gets forward from fullback, it's something that we see a lot now with modern football, fullbacks liking to get forward. We don't really see it in League 2, but he gets forward, and he's a massive creator for them. He also likes to take a shot from outside the box. I'm going to go for Tranmere win on penalties.
Yeah, well, you talk about Crepisa's name, and it's one that's always popped up as one of these exciting attacking fullbacks. I mean, if there wasn't the likes of Aarons and Lewis and Norwich and Stacey and Justin at Luton, then he probably could be in one of those names as the EFL team of the season, or one of these exciting footballers to watch in that wide position. But like you said, this is going to be a very tight fixture between all three playoffs. One definitely to watch Sunday? Sunday morning, 12 a.m. Sunday morning.
Perfect timing.
Australian time. Absolutely. That's perfect for us. Works well for them. One thing I didn't actually know up until the other day is when the championship finals on the Monday, they have the public holiday. So 3 p.m. Monday for English fans. But it is on the, I think, spring bank holiday. So that's worked out well for them. I guess it would be planned for it. that's very well done by the FA. So, yeah, we'll... But as with the League 2, yeah, I'm tipping Tranmere maybe just one goal lead, maybe by the end of 120.
Yep, and some reports about James Norwood as well. There are rumours that next season he'll be at Ipswich Town. Even if Tranmere get promoted to League 1, he's likely moved to Ipswich Town. Do you think that's a good move for him?
Yeah, well, Ipswich, obviously a massive club, and I think that some of the players they picked up and that will remain at the club into their League 1 season will certainly add. They were a poor attacking outfit this season. Norwood, I think he's one of those players that will find an easy transition into League 1. Obviously, a new club's not going to make things as stable as he'd like, but like we saw this year, he's just a well-known and knows where the goals are. I wouldn't be surprised if we see another 20 goals plus from him in League 1 if he is with Ipswich or even if he remains with Tranmere.
Let's move on to League 1 and this game, Sunderland and Charlton, Monday, 12 a.m. Johnny Williams, the man that was one of the big names in the Sunderland Till I Die documentary, he's now playing for Charlton, and he could actually put the dagger in Sunderland's hopes of getting back into the championship for next season, even though he's been playing starting from the bench in recent times. But this will be a cracker of a game. Sunderland got through with a 1-0 victory in the first leg over Portsmouth, and then they held on for a 0-0 draw in the second leg. Charlton, on the other hand, they had an entertaining game against Doncaster. It ended 4-4, didn't it?
Yeah, so
4-4 over the two legs. And at the end of that, in about the 85th minute onwards, it appeared that Doncaster would find a way of clawing their way back in and qualifying for the playoff final.
Yeah, well, Andy Butler's, I think, 88th minute equaliser meant that we were going to require an extra 30 minutes in that fiction. What had already been, over the first two legs, such an exciting, 180 minutes. But, yeah, moving on. And then John Marquis, who else, scoring for Doncaster. In the 100th minute, it took, less than a minute after that for Darren Prattley's equaliser to ensure penalties. So, like you said, between those two sides, it was always going to be quite an attacking fixture, bit of a scrap heap, if you will, with late balls into the box, long balls in, especially even that first leg. That's what we saw between the two sides. But, Charlton to go through on penalties after Tommy Rowe's miss, it was, yeah... disappointing for Doncaster, but I thought that Charlton probably were the better team in over the two legs, whilst they probably gave up the second half in that first leg. When it came down to penalties, they just certainly were just the more stable side. And what was another exciting penalty shootout. Congratulations to the Addicts for getting through.
Yeah, I expected that late goal to have a debilitating effect on Charlton. We see so many times when a team concedes late and then they go into extra time that they've run out of steam. But To their credit, they showed that they could still work hard. I'm pretty sure Lee Boyer, their manager, labelled his side as a machine by the way that they stood to their task, continued on working hard into extra time, even though they conceded that goal late. Again, we've mentioned it plenty of times this season, but Lee Boyer, what he's been able to achieve at Charlton with the off-field issues is an incredible job. And if he gets promotion, I would say he's probably in the top three managers in the EFL this season.
Absolutely right. I think that when you talk about Chris Wilder at Sheffield United, who rightfully did take out manager of the season in the EFL, Boyer's certainly not far off. Both managers have those parallels with a lot of problems above them that they can't control, but they did so well with what they could control and have gotten their sides to where they are. Obviously Sheffield now in the Premier League, but yeah, if Charlton were to make their way into the Championship, fantastic. And yeah, Boyer's performance on the weekend, he has this flexibility in his side. I know he pushed Bielik in to make that third centre back, so he had more width when pushing forward, and we know Bielik is a very good attacking player, but just showed that his flexibility under Boyer and that he is that diverse midfielder that we have seen this season. So, yeah, he's done fantastically well with the side. And, yeah, like I said from the last couple of weeks, a lot of eyes will be on Lyle Taylor, Rebo, these kind of players to lead from the front. And I'm expecting a high-scoring affair.
Yeah, well, Lee Boyer says Sunderland will enter the game as favourites, even though they finished lower on the table. He believes they'll enter the game as favourites as they won the opening game of the season between these two sides and then the draw in January. But we also have to think of the last time these two sides met in a playoff final, and that was in 1998-99 when the game ended 4-4 and it went to penalty shootouts. It went to a penalty shootout and Charlton got through. I think there was 14 penalties scored in that shootout.
Wouldn't mind a repeat of that, to be honest.
It would be interesting. Imagine Lee Cattermole, how he would react after the Czech Trade Trophy final.
I'm sure if it comes down to penalties, I'm expecting Lee Cattermole to blast one into the net.
How do you think they'll line up, Sunderland? There's still talk Adam McGeady might not be fit for the match. Will they play with two deep line midfielders or will they go with one? Will it be Cattermole and Lee Bitter? Who do they start in those positions?
Yeah, see, I think Lee Bitter's performance against Portsmouth was fantastic, and I think he holds that position. Yeah, like you said, McGeady, questionable. The good thing about these playoff fixtures is they do have a 2-week break before the final, so that should be... Look, there's still doubts, but it could be just enough time for him to make or face some game time. He might not start, but I'd hope to see him start to make this the best fixture possible. You know, Ozturk had a few problems at centre back. You know, he got obviously that red card earlier that almost ruled him out before it was rescinded. But yeah, look, I think pushing forward, they have got that flexibility to have those central players move wide. We know Honeyman does like to push wide as well, and McGeady, if he's not back, a lot will come on to Will Grigg. You know, they've certainly struggled since losing Josh Madger mid-season, and you'd assume that they probably would have already been penciled in for Championship football if they still had Josh Madger at the club. But that's just how football works. And yeah, look, they've got a lot of pressure in that front third, and a lot of it is going to come down to if McGeady's playing or not.
Who did they play up front, Grigg or Wyke?
Geez, Wyke. It's annoying to say that they've both. I guess for Sunderland fans, it'd be annoying to say that they're both playing probably as good as each other when they're both not really doing as well as you'd hope. Especially Will Grigg with the amount of money that's gone into him. Look, I think you back the big man in Grigg. I think that with the price tag, his form has certainly dipped since moving to the stadium a lot. But we know he's a big game player, and who he scored against for Wigan in those big games when he really needed and mattered most. So I'd be backing Will Grigg.
And who do you think is going to win? What's going to be the end result?
I think Charlton. I think just the pace, Lyle Taylor, Ariba up front, it's just going to be too much for Sunderland's defence. This could certainly be another game that pushes past 90 minutes. I'm just backing Charlton in to take this one out.
I really hope it goes to penalties. I'm hoping it goes to penalties, and I expect Charlton to win. I don't think our next guest will be happy with our tips for this match. Right on now, we have on the line, we have Sunderland fan Jaden Bevel. Jaden, thank you for joining us on the show. Unfortunately, we don't believe Sunderland will win the playoff final, but maybe you can try and convince us otherwise.
Yeah, fair enough. Thanks for having me, guys. Look, I think it's going to be a very interesting game. I can see why you'd back Charlton. They've just been a form team. the last few weeks, and you know, we're a bit out of form, but I think that loss to Doncaster, because they did technically lose in the 90 minutes, I think that might have actually affected their playoff hopes. And I think, I reckon Sunderland have a bigger chance, in all honesty. I think after that draw against Portsmouth and then the win in the first leg, I think we're going in pretty confident, to be honest.
Yeah, well, you struggled leading up to the playoff finals. What has changed in the past 2 weeks to see you now in the playoff final after the two defeats to end the season?
I think towards the end of the season, especially in the last really two games, the losses against Southend and Fleetwood, I think our automatic promotion hopes were kind of gone. And I think that affected the team thinking, you know, look, we're not going to make automatic promotion. And I guess we kind of fell asleep, you could say. So I think now the teams, you know, we've reconvened. And I think Jack Ross has done a great job in, you know, getting the team up for the big game.
Captain George Honeyman came out in that second after the second leg and said that whilst you know you weren't able to find a score, the team still felt comfortable throughout the game. Did you feel the same, or were you still quite a nervous wreck whilst the second leg was going on?
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty nervous for the full 90 minutes. I won't lie, but I mean that's what you're going to be when you're only 1-0 up in the second leg. You're going to be nervous. But, you know, I thought it was a really professional performance from the boys. And, you know, they played really well. And I'd say it was actually a very good performance and one of our best all season. I know we didn't score, but if that was a league game and we took, you know, a point away from Portsmouth away, you know, on a Friday night, I'd take that any day of the week. I thought it was a very good result.
Up the other end of the field, there's talk about who's going to start up front. Will it be Will Grigg? Will it be Wyke? How do you think that they will set up?
Personally, I think Charlie Wyke will start. I think he's in pretty good form. And Will Grigg, I don't think he's scored in, since... I can't remember. It's been a long time. So I think he's a bit out of form. So I think Charlie Wyke will most likely start. But I'd be interested to see if Chris Maguire will start as well on the wing, because he's been playing really well since coming back from injury.
Yeah, and also McGeady, he suffered an injury... a broken foot, but then in the lead-up to one of the games, he had to pull out in the lead-up to that game. Will he be fit for the final? And if he is, does he start or does he come off the bench?
Yeah, I mean, he was meant to play the first leg against Portsmouth. He was actually named in the team in the starting lineup, and then, late change, he injured it in the warm-up. So it was pretty disappointing. And then I think it was pretty good to rest him against Portsmouth in the second leg. You don't want to risk it, especially knowing that Portsmouth, they're going to be an aggressive team. You know, they're going to be going for the leg. So I think it was actually a very good move by Jack Ross to rest him. And I'd be hoping he'd be coming back for the final. And if he does, he'll make a massive impact to the team. Personally, I would start him. I think it's really important to get a quick start, just like we did in the Checker Trade Trophy. And, you know, McGeady proved that when he scored in the first half. So if we can get him on in the first half, and then, you know, we've got depth, you know, the likes of like Lyndon Gooch to come on as a sub. And, you know, I don't think Gooch is necessarily comfortable in starting, but I think coming on in the 70th or 80th minute, he can really do damage.
Now, Lee Bowyer, Charlton's manager, his tactics can be quite hard to read. He does like to shift formations throughout the game. And certainly we saw against Doncaster, he certainly did at halftime with substitutions. Do you back Sunderland's depth and flexibility to be able to alter your own gameplay mid-game to counter Charlton's tactics?
Look, I think we've got the players too. I think our players, you know, we've got quite an experienced team. You know, John McLaughlin as keeper, for instance, you know, he led Burton to a couple of promotions. You know, we've got Lee Cadamol, you know, these players are really experienced. And I think during the game, they're going to be the leaders. And then I think, you know, Jack Ross does have his work cut out for him. You know, he is quite defensively minded, and we saw that against Portsmouth. But I would like to see the team score one or two goals early on rather than sit back, because I honestly believe if we don't win in the 90 minutes, we're going to struggle to win the game. I think, you know, to score an extra time, and we're not great on penalties, you know, as you saw in the Checker Trade Trophy. So I'd be looking to score early on and get an early lead, because once we get that early lead, I reckon we can hold off and get the win.
Now, obviously, a massive game for the club, especially over the last two seasons. And the playing group do seem confident. Luke Owen has come out saying that the last Wembley trip was for pleasure, but this one is for business. How confident are you with words like that coming from a young player?
Look, I think it's great. You know, I think the confidence is really good. I mean, one of my favourite players is Luke. You know, he's a gun on the he's playing it right back now and used to be a centre mid. But I quite like the confidence coming out of the players. You know, you don't want to go into this final thinking, you know, it's going to be a tough game. You want to think that you can win. That's really the best way of going into the game. So I'm really excited for it. You know, I am a bit nervous, but I truly think we can get over the line. And, you know, either way, it's going to make good drama for our next season on Netflix.
Has there been a lot of talk about the past playoff final between these two sides in 98-99?
I mean, yes and no. I've thought about it a few times. And you know, I'm a fairly superstitious person, but, you know, that was 20-odd years ago. The players have changed dramatically since then. So you can't, you know, say, oh, you know, we might lose on penalties because what happened in 98-99. So I think, you know, there's a bit of talk as well on some of the forums that it's a bit of revenge for us. But personally, I just think it's another game. And, you know, even though it is the final, it could be against anyone. It just happens to be against Charlton.
We know about all the issues at Sunderland last season and then also the change in ownership. There's also been reports now that Sunderland's looking to get more investment into the club. How do you think the club is set up at the moment? And are they stable enough, just in case they don't get promotion back to the Championship, are they stable enough to be up there again next season in League One if they don't get promotion?
100%. I personally think that if we don't get promoted this year, I think we'll smash the league next year and win by 20 points. I think I truly believe that. And if we do get promoted this year, I think we'll, you know, it'll be tough in the Championship. It's not an easy league. And I think, you know, it'll be probably mid to lower table. But, you know, Stuart Donald has come out and said that, you know, he wants to be the man to take us forward. But his net worth isn't so big, so he's definitely looking for more investment, and we need that investment, otherwise we won't be a Premier League team.
Thank you, Jane. Just before we let you go, we're sure you're tipping a Black Cats win, but how's this game unfolding in your eyes?
Personally, I'm going to tip something very similar to the first game of the season, which I was lucky enough to be at, Charlton-Sunderland. I think Charlton will score first, and we'll score two and a late winner. We'll see us go up.
And who's going to be scoring that late winner?
I think Chris Maguire. I feel like he'll score a late winner. Or maybe even Gooch off the bench like he did in the first game. But, I'm very excited. I think influential players will be like Lee Cattermole. I think Lee Cattermole will be man of the match personally. I just think he'll want a bit of revenge seeing you miss that penalty against Portsmouth. So I think he'll really turn it on.
Well, that would make the perfect ending to the season and the perfect ending for season two of Sunderland Till I Die. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate having you on, and hopefully for your sake and for all Black Cats' sake that they come away with the victory and return to the Championship next season.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy.
Thanks to Jaden Bevel for joining us on the show today. Let's move on to the Championship, the £180 million game. It's the richest game in football, this one, and it's Aston Villa and Derby. They're going at it at Wembley Stadium Tuesday morning, 12 a.m. our time, which will be, as Mitch said, the day off over in England. It's a massive game. We expected Aston Villa to secure their spot in the playoff final, but we didn't expect Derby County to come away with the victory at Allen Road.
Yeah, one of the best games of the season coming in. The second last game of the season, a fantastic effort from Frank Lampard and that whole Derby outfit. Absolutely, you know, just shocked Lairs. I thought after Dallas's second goal that this was a lot of momentum in Leeds' hands. But look, yeah, that the halftime substitute for Jack Marriott to come on and that debacle or the mix-up between Cooper and Casilla really, you know, gifted Derby that momentum and pushing onto into the game. And yeah, it was just like I said, this is one of the best games we've seen from and we can't really expect anything less from the Championship.
I would love someone to break down the points totals for Leeds United when they had Peacock Farrell in goal at the start of the season and then compare that to the points tally under Kiko Casilla, because I reckon that they're their form has dipped since he's arrived from Real Madrid, and I reckon that Peacock Farrell was a better goalkeeper.
Yeah, I think that from the start of the season, we knew Peacock Farrell was probably having more issues, or was having probably more fingers pointed at him than probably what we have seen from Casilla, because I think that the error on the weekend looked like Cooper was. It looked like Cooper probably was the one in fault. But, yeah, look, obviously with Leeds do have quite a depleted back line. Yes, Jansen's fitness is questionable. Cooper's now playing, and Ayling has probably not playing his best football. Dallas isn't usually this. I would say this. They're probably ideally starting left back. You know, they've got Barry Douglas. But, yeah, look, with injuries, I think that's probably one thing that you could argue for Casilla. But like you said, it has been quite a concern with such a prominent signing for them, probably not delivering as much as they'd hope for.
He loves to get off his line. And even there was other times in that game where he tried going for the ball when it was clear he shouldn't have. And he almost conceded more goals over the two legs. I think that they've got to go back to Peacock Farrell next season. We'll talk about the Derby's form in that game. And the way they lined up, they played a diamond formation to gain more traction in midfield, and also up front. They had Marriott on the bench. He came on early on in that match and scored with his first touch of the football.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And I think one thing we touched on last week going into this second leg was that it was going to take a lot of Derby's youth. We know they are quite a young side, but when you talk about, yeah, Marriott's brace, Harry Wilson from the penalty spot, Mason Mount, the other goal scorer, it really was their youth that carried him over the line here. Tomori, once again, was fantastic. And, yeah, like this side, it's a very exciting lineup. Heading into the final, it'll be interesting to see, obviously, how they stand up, these young players. Both sides obviously dropped down to 10 men. One red card to Malone later than obviously the Berardi one, but both very silly challenges and Malone missing the final now. So, yeah, look, for Derby, this is, they'll be absolutely buzzing. We saw after probably 24 hours after the game had finished that Frank Lampard had spent, I think, £2,800 on a bar tab. But, they're happy to celebrate. With one game to go, it was an interesting one. Maybe hold the expensive bar tab. Imagine what it could be if they actually won the final. Jeez. But, you look at the result for both teams, one side in, probably not going in favourites, but I guess you're not like Leeds, and who are now spending, 16th consecutive year in the championship.
Yep, they've got nothing to lose, Derby. They needed to beat West Brom in their last game of the season to qualify for the playoffs. They did that, and from sixth position now they're into the playoff final with a young team. On one of the other podcasts, might have been the Total Football podcast, they compared the age of the Derby team from last season to this season, and I'm pretty sure their last game last year, their average age was about 29, and that's gone down to about 25 or even 24 this season. They've just developed the young players. One concern for them will be, if they don't get promoted, Harry Wilson and Mason Mount won't be there next season, and they'll need to fill the void, and they'll need to bring players in for those two positions. There's also talk that Marriott might leave and go back to Peterborough, the team that he was signed from at the start of the season. And what I found interesting in their match against Leeds, the second leg of that clash, they played more of a direct style of football. So to counter Leeds' press, they pushed the ball forward to open up space. And Aston Villa as well, they're another team that like to press, and that's why they played Hourihan instead of Glenn Whelan. If they do that again, I reckon Derby will try and play long ball football.
Yeah, I think that I wouldn't like to see it until the death stage of the game, but we both know these sides do like to play on that front foot, and they do like to shift in the end, especially in that defensive midfield through to the attack. So, yeah, like you said, this Derby side pushing through, if they were to get up even into the Premier League, it'd be interesting to see what happens with Mount and Wilson. I wouldn't be expecting permanent deals, especially with Chelsea are at and how well Harry Wilson's playing. I doubt Liverpool would be giving away for much less than what would probably be a record deal for someone at his age. So Tomori is another one on that list on loan from Chelsea. But luckily, we saw obviously Keogh is more of the veteran in defence, but he had a fantastic game in that second leg, which was great to see. And it's a great confidence booster for Frank Lampard. But coming up against Aston Villa. It's going to be interesting. Coming up against the assistant coach at Aston Villa, John Terry, former teammates. This is a massive Chelsea derby. And if Chelsea fans are listening, I'd be tuning in because there's a lot of future at this club as well. Whilst you do have your past players, you have Abraham, you have Mount, you have Tomori in there as well. And yeah, this is, I guess you could almost label it a Chelsea derby, but we want to leave the Premier League out of it because either way, this game is going to end up an absolute thriller.
Yeah, and for Villa, the question will be, will they play Conor Hourihan as their central defensive midfielder, or will they go for Glenn Whelan? In that second leg, they played Hourihan, as I mentioned, to press, and also they like to play out from the back, and Hourihan's a better passer than Glenn Whelan. In that game, it went to penalties. They were fortunate to get through Aston Villa. But this will be redemption for them if they can get the victory. They made the final last season, and even though they lost 1-0 to Fulham, it was a woeful performance by Aston Villa, and they should have lost by more. They will seek redemption. Jack Grealish will want to win the silverware for them as captain. There was an article in the Birmingham paper, and he was mentioning that he's always dreamed of winning silverware or lifting silverware with his boyhood club. So he's going to have a key role in this game. He'll play more attacking, and I reckon he'll be the one that scores the winner.
Well, that would be a fairy tale story for young Jack. But, yeah, look, like you said, they're chasing redemption here, and look, it's a new boss. It's a new look side, and hopefully it's a new result compared to how they went against Fulham last season. But, just reflecting on that West Brom fixture, Jed Steer was massive for them. You know, they're another side like Leeds that have struggled with goals. They had Nyland, and they brought in, Kalinic, yep, as well in goals. And Steer's been the one to step up for them. Two saves in that penalty shootout.
He steered the ship.
He actually came out saying after the game that he faced close to 100 penalties in the days leading up to that fixture. So just shows where there is training and mentality was at for that game, which was fantastic. Look, they didn't win the game, but they did have the upper hand and got it to penalties. Like they said, they were very cool, calm and composed in that fixture. Unfortunately, Adoma was the only one that missed, I think, for Villa. But like you said, they had the backup and the resources with Tammy Abraham finishing that one off. Miller Jednak won for the Aussies. His only touch for the game was from the penalty spot. So it was smart by Dean Smith. He knows how good he is for the Socceroos from 12 yards out. And, yeah, didn't doubt him wrong in that final. But, yeah, pushing on. Villa 7-0 aggregate over Derby for the season with a 3-0 win away and then that 4-0 win at home in March. So look, they're heading into this fixture probably favourites and deservingly so, going off those two results. But as well, Villa have lost their 5 of the last 6 at Wembley with that win coming against Liverpool in the FA Cup semi-final in 2015.
And that was when Grealish stamped his mark on the world football. Who do we expect to win? This is the £180 million game, so there's a lot riding on this.
It is, and I'm going against recent history because I think this will probably be the first final since West Ham Blackpool in 2012 to have both sides score, and I'm expecting Aston Villa 3-1.
I'm going to go Villa 2-1, extra time. One person that will want Villa to win, of course, is Ross McCormack. Have you heard the reports that if Villa get promoted, McCormack's contract goes up to $75,000 a week?
So he's still at Villa, is he online?
He's still at Villa.
I'm
he's on loan
think,
to
is
the Scottish
City,
League.
Is it Central Coast Mariners? He's
earning $75,000 to do nothing.
Yeah, well,
can Villa, Aston Villa sign us up?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that just for a couple of extra weeks' pay. But, yeah, well, there you go for Ross. Look, I think, yeah, like you said, Jack Grealish is going to be probably the main man to focus on. I think Harry Wilson as well, two of the bigger names for the season. Wilson's coming into this game off his last 10 with 6 goals and 2 assists. So two players in great form. It's going to be a great fixture.
Of course, we want to know who you guys think will win this and also the other EFL playoff final. So get in touch with us on EF_show on Twitter or English Football Show on Facebook and let us know who you think is going to win these playoff finals. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with the FA Cup review and also our 20 previews in 20 minutes. Welcome back to the English Football Show right here on FNR Football Nation Radio. FA Cup time, and what a shellacking it was, a one-sided FA Cup. The biggest scoreline since 1903 when Bury defeated Derby on that day.
Do you remember that game, do you?
Oh yeah, I was there that day. I think VAR was used that day as well.
Yeah, likely.
What a game! If you're a City fan, you'd love it. If you're a fan of football, you wouldn't, because it was one-sided. After the second goal, I went to sleep. That's because I knew it was game over. It wasn't going to be a comeback. Watford had chances though. They did have chances to start the game.
They did. I thought that they were very impressive early on. And watching back that fixture, they did well pressing down onto. I don't know if City really have a weaker side, but pressing onto the right side for City with Mahrez on the right wing and trying to just avoid Raheem Sterling from trying to touch the ball. It obviously didn't work out by the end of the game, but they did very well with Mahrez, Hollabas pushing over and Pereira helping out on that side. But credit to City. Just when you thought they were done breaking records, 6-0 against Watford. They scored 26 goals in the FA Cup, which is the most since 1946 as well. So, this season it just mirrors what they've done in the Premier League and what they did in the League Cup. Watford had a fantastic run, I thought. Like you said, they did start well, but this City with a domestic treble and probably deservingly so.
I read a quote, and it's the perfect quote for Manchester City, and that's insatiable hunger for more. Which they're always wanting to improve. They want to have the most passes in the game. They want to score the most goals. They want to have the most possession. They're always hungry for more. And we saw that at the end when Guardiola, he had a go at Raheem Sterling at the end of the match for one of his errors. And that just shows you that no matter how good they are now, they're always wanting to get better.
Exactly right. That was just showing great character. And I think Raheem Sterling certainly took it on the chin, he said out afterwards, that's exactly what he expects from Pep as well. That, you know, whilst it was a fantastic game for him, there's still obviously a lot more he can learn. He is such a young player still. So it was fantastic to see from Pep, I thought. And just shows what character and why he is one of the best managers in football.
Kevin De Bruyne named man of the match after only playing 35 minutes. Scored, had an assist and completed 40 or 41 passes.
Yeah, look, the stats lined up fantastic for him. I thought that you look at the whole game, it's probably over by the time he got on. But he was fantastically well, and any player from that team probably could have taken out that award. We will move on now though, because we do have about 20 minutes left for our 20 team EPL review. We'll go through alphabetical order. Start us off, Arsenal. Chris, what have you got for us?
Well, I've given them a C plus for this season. I think a fifth place finish improved from last season. Aubameyang 22 goals in that 22 game unbeaten run midway through the year. There's been improvement at Arsenal compared to the Wenger era, but there are still issues there. Their defence is an issue, plus their away form, plus losing Aaron Ramsey, who is their key. That's going to be a problem for next season.
Exactly right. I just had Unai Emery, massive tick for him. I think as a new coach, he's done very well. They had their defensive struggles, and that's hopefully if they do have enough money, that's where they'll look to in the offseason. They've missed the UCL, do have their chance, and that's probably where their season's going to be relying on, is this Europa League final. But yeah, like you said, Ramsey out. If they can hold on to Lacazette, then that's a big positive, but he also looks like a big question mark.
Moving on to Bournemouth, they finished 14th this season, top six early in the campaign, but then slipped down the ladder. The third leakiest defense, and that is 70 goals conceded, which is terrible for them. I've given them a C-minus just for, yet again, punching above their weight and staying in the Premier League, but I think that they've got to do a bit more next season. I think next year they've got to target a top 10 finish.
We know that they've signed Lloyd Kelly from Bristol, a fullback. A positive signing. The amount of money was probably the main talking point, $13 million. I think that's probably a bit overs, but this isn't a very exciting young player, and it's going to add to their youth. Ryan Fraser was fantastic. I think he finished second behind Hazard in assists, maybe.
Yeah.
By come the end of the season, Brooks up front, fantastic for them. Yeah, we did talk about, obviously, their slump. I think they had 7 games for 4 points and 20 goals against in that mid-season, but that backed up their 6 wins in their first 10. Certainly helped out. Moving on.
Just before that, you talk about the amount of money they spend. They do spend a lot of money on players that don't perform. Look at Dominic Solanke. There's also a few others. I just can't think of them right now, but they do spend a lot of money on players that don't live up to those expectations.
Yeah, absolutely right. We'll move on. Brighton. Tough season for them, but I guess they surpassed the second season syndrome. it's been announced this morning that Graham Potter will sign a 4-year deal for them as manager, taking over Chris Hughton. What was your rating for them this year?
I gave him a D, just because of the amount of money they spent in the off-season and those players not delivering. Plus, we've had a lot of bad teams this year, and the three teams have been probably the three worst teams that we've seen in the Premier League era. And they're lucky that those teams were in the Premier League this season, because any other year, this team would have been relegated.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think it wasn't a high-quality Premier League side. And yeah, they were quite lucky to avoid relegation. They were in it until the last few match days. But next team on the list?
Burnley, 15th on the table. They almost qualified for Europe at the start of the season. Couldn't get the job done. Joe Hart, massive flop. They've got the four best goal, probably the best four goalkeepers of any side in the Premier League in terms of the class that they got. They got Hart and Heaton and Pope and then Lindegaard as well. They've all won, two of them have won Premier League titles. But I've given them a C. Their 2019 form has been really good, and I'm pretty sure it's inside the top six in terms of points won in 2019, but all up, it's been a pretty poor season for them. So I'm just giving them a C.
Yeah, I think Sean Dyche is the right man still. Look, they had three wins in their first 19, but they went on that 8 straight unbeaten in January, and they nailed the 40-point mark. That's, I guess, what you can ask for. They probably would have asked for more at the start of the season, but looking at where they were at early in that first half of the season, they'll certainly take it. Moving on, Cardiff. They're one win away from survival in the end. Yeah, look, this is a side, like we mentioned, just not a Premier League quality outfit. They battled on, we'll say that. They battled on, but they just didn't have those standout players, the star players, who were really going to take this side outside of that bottom three. Six defeats in their opening eight was kind of just the start for them, and they kind of just plateaued from there. Yeah, I think, like you said, this side would also be lucky not to be labelled arguably the worst of the season, thanks to the two that fell below them. But yeah, under Neil Warnock, there's some positives going into next season, I guess.
Yep, Warnock has announced that he will stay at the club next season, and they've got a good championship side. Also, just we know what their off-field issues this season with the Emiliano Sala disaster. So for them, in the end, there's stuff that's more important than football, and Cardiff have realised that this season. Move on to Chelsea. I've given them two ratings. On field, I've given them a B-, but off field, I've given them a D.
Yeah, I understand the two ratings, obviously. I've got a big tick for Champions League spot sewn up. Europa final, it's going to be massive for them. Win or loss, it's not going to be, you know, the end of the world. They have got that Champions League spot for next season. The big question mark is Surrey, and does he still have the trust of the fans? I think he'll be there first game next season. And I'm actually going to tip that all top six sides from this year will not lose a manager next season.
So they'll all keep their
spots? They'll all keep their spots. Surrey, probably the biggest question mark. Gone to Solskjaer, they'll give plenty of time to. We'll talk about United a little bit later.
Pochettino said he might leave.
I think they'll hold on to Poch. But yeah, for Surrey, does he have the trust of the fans?
I don't know if they trust him, but he has to stay. They finished third. They made the Carabao Cup final. They've qualified for the Champions League plus the Europa League. What more can you ask when you've got the two best teams, some of the best teams that we've ever seen in the Premier League, finishing up above them? Move on to Crystal Palace. They finished 12th. Zaha and Wan-Bissaka, that's all I have to say about Crystal Palace. They've got two players there that they'll want to keep hold of, and if they do let them go, they'll probably earn over $100 million from those two players. Yet again, survived in the Premier League. Haven't finished in the top 10 again for... I don't think they've ever finished in the top 10 in the Premier League era. But they did beat Manchester City. One of few teams that did beat Manchester City this season.
3-2 win away, wasn't it?
Yeah. At
Andros Townsend goal. How can you forget that?
And I gave them a C+.
Yeah, look, I think that they started... Well, they had 8 games without a win over October and November. They had 9 points in their first 13. So to get to where they want and the squad that they've built come the end of the season, when you talk about Wan-Bissaka and where he's at, yeah, they've done fantastic while developing their youth. Next team, Everton. The one word I had for them was inconsistent. Strong finish to the season, sure. I guess their highlight was, in the end, a nil-all with Liverpool that really just didn't give them the title. They'll be happy with that. It looks like they're going to miss out on keeping Gomez and Zuma. Zuma will probably stay at Chelsea and Gomez is likely to go to Tottenham, which is a massive steal for the Spurs. But, yeah, look, they had some fantastic signings. Moving into next season, you'll think Lookman will take over from Walcott's position. They do have quite a young side still, which is good, but they will have to do a bit more with the budget.
Yeah, I gave them a C for their season. Improvement on last year, but still a lot of work to be done to get to where they want to be. Fulham, disappointment. I think it's clear. A D. We could give them an F, an E, whatever. It's been a failure. A team that we had high hopes for, spent over £100 million in the off-season. Players didn't live up to expectations, conceded 81 goals. Ryan Sessegnon will leave. Tom Kearney, there was always that talk of, can he do it in the Premier League? And he showed that he was a disappointment. Three managers in a season. It was a woeful season for
Fulham. Exactly right. Exactly right. I think that the three managers in the season part is the main talking point. Parker does look, I think like a good signing for them, whilst they probably wouldn't have wanted to have made it in the first place. Relegated in early April, two wins in the first half of the season. They just couldn't find that run that they needed. Couldn't get out of that bottom three. And like you said, the amount of money they spent and the quality of players they brought in was looking like they were going to finish mid-table. Or around just below that mark. But, yeah, unfortunately, second last, it was very, very poor for them.
A team that was even poorer than them, Huddersfield, they finished 20th, 16 points all season, only three wins. I give them a D, unfortunately, for Aaron Moy.
I reckon that's lenient. Joint earliest relegation in...
Well,
Premier,
D's a failure. I wasn't going to...
D is a failure.
I'll give them a Z.
Failure is probably administration and dropping two leagues somehow in the one
Bolton.
Season. Yeah, well, if we ever do our championship reviews, we're happy to give Bolton an F. But, for Huddersfield, look, 22 goals scored all season. I think that was 14 with about a few games to go. So they just couldn't find the net at all. Jan Seibert, I think he's a good manager, though.
Do you think they'll keep him?
I think I'd like to see him stay on. I think that, look, with the championship, they're not going to be a side that's going to be bouncing back anytime soon. But survival, I think he'll be a manager that'll be able to hold on to that survival in the championship next season.
All right, Leicester, ninth on the table. Two managers this season. Brendan Rodgers has come in and he's got a young, attacking, vibrant side. There's a lot of expectations on him for next season. I've given him a C+. If you go by Brendan Rodgers and what he's been able to do at the end of the season, it's definitely a B. But for the way that they played under Claude Puel, plus also not taking the FA Cup serious when they could have made a FA Cup run and they could have been the Watford of this season, I'm giving them a C+.
Yeah, I've got down here. It's just a season of two halves for him. Rodgers is a massive tick. What he's done with the club since Puel was sacked has been massive for them. Such a young squad, and to finish ninth, like you said. Had at the start of the season that James Maddison would be the signing of the year. Top three, I guess, in that category. He's been absolutely fantastic for them, especially obviously when they also signed Youri Tielemans. I think he's a player I've talked about every week since he joined the Foxes. But those two in midfield have been fantastic. Pereira, Chilwell out wide, fantastic. Vardy probably will drop to a backup next season if they want to spend on that position, and I think they will.
Yep. Liverpool, second on the table, one defeat all season. Best season, their best campaign in the Premier League era, but there was still one machine that was above them on the table. I've given them an A+. You can't go wrong with Liverpool and what they've been able to do this season.
Yeah, I think that I'm assuming there's no A++ in your ranking system, that they do deserve the same rating as Manchester City. Fantastic. Well, 116 out of 119 titles. What they've done with some of their players as well, I thought that a Fabinho, Wijnaldum, Henderson midfield wouldn't work as well as it has this season. They've been absolutely fantastic for them, likely to line up in the Champions League as well. Their defenders, Matip and Lovren, I think have been fantastic, especially coming into the end of the season when they really got that tight push. And now Gomez is fit again. It's a real head scratch for Jurgen Klopp as who's to start in the Champions League final. But, for Liverpool, this was a fantastic season and hardly put a foot wrong. Moving on to the team that really didn't put a foot wrong, Manchester City. Impeccable. The domestic treble, massive tick, 198 points in two seasons. 98 this year alone was ridiculous. I don't know what more I can say. You've got him at an A+, but I'm sure you've got a few notes on City's season as well.
Yeah, 95 goals scored in the season. They've developed Phil Foden into a regular starter now, you could say. The only areas that they'll need to improve on now is that Fitzcompany's announced his retirement, and he's, well, not retirement, but he's leaving Manchester City, and he's moving to Anderlecht as a player manager, which good luck to Fitzcompany for doing that. Fernandinho as well had a few injuries, and he's getting on with age. So they're probably two areas that they'll want to stock up in the off-season. But A-plus for Manchester City. Brilliant season all round. 14 victories to end the season to win the title. That's fantastic.
Yeah, the only question is, can they do a third in a row? Now, the next club, Manchester United. Chris, I'm going to give you this whole minute.
Oh, I don't need a minute. All I'm going to say is woeful. Mourinho gone, players don't care about their performances. It's the worst season you could possibly have at Manchester United. Everything's gone wrong. There's going to be a lot of need for change at the end of the campaign. Still looking for a director of football. There's reports that it's Darren Fletcher. Enough said about that. I'm giving United a D, but it could be an F.
All right, we'll quickly move on then. Newcastle, winless in their first 10. Depleted funding, and I think they've done very well to get to where they are. I think Bananas is the club's biggest asset at the moment. What he's done with the amount of money the amount of money that isn't coming in. They did get to spend a little bit of cash on Miguel Almirón, who was fantastic for them before they got injured. But I'm very positive looking forward for Newcastle and their fans.
Yeah, positive if Bananas stays and he gets the finances that he needs. He wants to win silverware at Newcastle and wants to challenge for European spots. Will he get it? I don't think so, with Mike Ashley in charge. But I'm giving him a C. Hopefully, somehow they get that money that they need, because that's a massive club there that deserves success.
Yep, absolutely right. Moving on, Southampton, Ralph Hasenhüttl, massive tick for me. I'll say he's a poor man's Jurgen Klopp, with how excited he gets on the bench. But he's got a lot of character about him, and I think there's a big positive for Southampton moving forward. Although one win in 14 to start was obviously their big downfall under Hughes, and I think they should have finished a lot higher than being in a relegation battle with the list that they've got.
Well, I don't think they've got a great list. They got the youngest squad in the Premier League, average age of 25, but it's not a great list. And in recent years, they haven't lived up to what their philosophy has been in the years prior when they did get promoted. If they can return to that and get some young players in, some players that play attacking football and a passing football, which they wanted under Pochettino, I think that they will be able to climb next season.
Yeah, I think that with the side they've got, if Ward-Prowse is playing minutes as well, then they're looking like a great outfit in that midfield. Valerie, a great find for them. A fullback position.
And Nathan Redmond as well. He's been called up to the England squad for the Nations League.
You go, massive for them. Moving on, Tottenham. Kick us off, Chris.
I've given a B, but that's largely due to their Champions League success plus what they've been able to do without buying any players. But they've had 13 defeats this season, which has been woeful for Tottenham and for a top four side. Plus, also the stuff going on with their stadium as well. What they've been able to do to avoid or to finish in the top four with all the off-field issues, that's the reason why I've given them a B.
Yeah, I think that, look, no new signings, injuries, the whole new stadium being up in the air for probably a month and a half to 2 months and finishing where they were. Holding on to Poch as well, when especially we knew Man United were going to come hunting after
that. Well, have they held on to it?
I think they will. I think he's staying there. I can't remember which game it was after. Maybe it was after the last game of the season. But he sounded like he's loving this club at the moment. And I think he'll be on there for the rest of next year as well. But, yeah, look, a Champions League spot, fantastic for them. In the final, awesome for them. Watford's our next team. What's your rating?
I've given them a B+. Yeah, actually not a B+, a B.
A B?
A B, making the FA Cup final, even though it was a disappointment, still the FA Cup run, that's what you want. They've now stamped their authority as a genuine mid-table Premier League side. They've retained their manager for the first time in God knows how long. But, yeah, I think that it's a good season for Watford.
Yeah, I think stability under Gracia is fantastic. De La Feu has found his calling. We know why he was at Barcelona and AC Milan, and unfortunately couldn't find it at Everton, but he's been fantastic for them. 50 points, looked at a buzzing start, poor finish, but I'd say a positive season all up for Watford. West Ham, next one, look, four defeats to start. It looked very, very poor heading in that first month, but Felipe Anderson's turned into that signing that they were really after last season. Fantastic year for him. Declan Rice has been fantastic. And Diagana as well, I think it is. Both of those academy players have been fantastic for them. Rice has now got 60 games at the age of 20. I think Diagana had 20-plus now. So, yeah, they've done really well through their academy.
Yeah, but I've given them a C. I think that they've had a really good season. And finally, to end it all, Wolves, in their first season in the top flight, back up. They finished 7th. They qualified for Europe. I've given them a B+, but they could have become an A- if they beat Huddersfield this season. And unfortunately, they lost both of their games. And if they won those, they probably would have finished 6th.
Yeah, I think that, look, yeah, they exceeded very high expectations for a club that's just returned to the top tier of football. Matt Doherty, a massive tick. Neves had a great season and wasn't as relied on as we would have expected in that midfield. And I'd say he'd probably be still in that top 5 for them. And Gibbs White, probably one of the bigger positives coming through as such a young player. But yeah, Wolves will be interesting. I think they certainly could finish top 6 next year.
Well, that is it for the English Football Show this week. We'll be back again next week to recap all of the EFL playoff finals. Plus, we'll preview the Champions League and Europa League finals. So make sure you tune in next Tuesday. But for now, we'll catch you again next week.